to 32 fans in 32 days. I'm Alex Chester, and with me as always is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
I'm so excited to be done with this after tonight. Not, no offense to the four people we have left, but like, it's been such a slog. I really don't know how we physically did 32 of these last year. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it really makes no sense. Like, I was on vacation in Florida, so it was easy to like get away from the in-laws and record like three in a night, but still 32 of them, and you edited 32 of them. It's insane.
Yeah, and this year we only had to do 8 podcasts because we
it's really 31
each of them.
Yeah, it's 31 because we still haven't spoken to the Redskins guy.
Yeah, that's true. He's still being boycotted.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we have the NFC South, our final division today, and we have some good guests to talk NFC South. Before we do that, should we just mention one more time the 32 fans pick'em pool?
Pick'em pool, yeah.
Yeah, so go to tinyurl.com/32fanspool. That'll take you to the ESPN login for a pick'em league. The password is 32 fans, and it'll just be this is not against the spread. This is just picking winners and losers each week. The only wrinkle is it's going to be head to head. So if you go 11-5 in a week, but your opponent that week goes 12-4, you get an L. And if you go 8-8 and your opponent goes 6-10, you get a W. And then we'll have playoffs, et cetera. We'll figure out exactly the details of how the playoffs is going to work, I think, once we figure out how many people total are in. Yeah.
We just need an even number. It doesn't matter how many.
Yeah. So if we're at an even number and you become the odd guy, if you're number 25, make sure you find a friend, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not two friends, unless one of them at 27 is going to find another
friend.
All right,
stepping
in. And so on and so forth. Yeah. All right, so let's jump right into the NFC South. We have four great guests here to talk NFC
great
South
guests.
Today. Yeah, great guests. Three of them returning guests from last fall.
Returning champions.
Last year we had all four of these teams in the bottom half of our power rankings.
Mm-hmm. Nailed it.
Well, three of the four are back in the bottom half again this year.
Yeah, baby.
One of them is not, obviously. So we'll start. We have Gavin Napier here to talk to us about the Atlanta Falcons. Gavin, you are also a writer for Beale Street Bears, the Grizzlies site. All right, well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me on again. Enjoyed it last year. Looking forward to this year.
Here to talk Bucks, we have Kyle Appleyard, returning champ, co-host of Word of the Bay podcast, which is, I think, Bucks, Rays, and Lightning. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Pretty much Bucks, Rays, and Lightning, yeah.
Any mutiny talk or no?
No mutiny talk. Occasionally, okay. we'll throw in some rowdies talk, but that's about it.
Okay.
All right, then here to... back again as he was last year, Andrew Juge of the Saints Nation blog.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Pretty good. And then the newcomer we have, although he did help us in our 32 Fans mock draft in April, but he wasn't on the podcast last year. That's Tony Dunn from Carolina Cat Chronicles is here to talk Panthers. So Tony, welcome to the podcast.
What's up, fellas? Thanks for having me on.
Did Tony pick the right player for the Panthers in April?
We'll get to that.
Okay, fine.
Are we recapping the draft right now? Is that what we're doing? Okay, so let's hop right in, and we'll start at the bottom of the standings last year.
Oh, boy.
That's the and actually, I do notice I have them ranked 24 in my power rankings, just a couple spots behind their division mates, although I do not pick them to finish in last place, even though I have them lowest in my power rankings. I don't really know what kind of sense that makes.
That doesn't make any
sense. But anyways, maybe they have an easier schedule. Kyle, we're going to start with you, and we're going to talk Bucks.
Fair enough.
You know, I think Jameis Winston is in the direction of becoming a star quarterback. So I'm going to skip right to the backfield behind him. Pro Football Focus's number one rated running back in the NFL last year was Doug Martin. Do you know who number two was?
Charles Sims.
Charles Sims, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, you have a couple of great guys in the backfield. Obviously, you have talented wide receivers, a great quarterback. To me, the biggest problem in this offense seems to be the offensive line, the left side especially. You have like Donovan Smith, who is not an NFL left tackle.
Donovan Smith consistently he's one of those guys who looks terrible on film, but he somehow gets the job done when it comes to game time. He's an enigma. I don't know that this guy
So what are they doing to improve their offensive line?
Well, they went out and got J.R. Sweezy this offseason, who's starting the season on the physically unable to perform list. So a lot of good that really did us. Not a whole heck of a lot. I mean, you went out and got Caleb Benenock in the draft. And they're kind of standing pat with the guys that they had last year. Ali Marpet was good for him, but now he's been walking around in a boot the last few weeks. And yeah, like you said, Donovan Smith not really turning heads. You have DeMar Dotson, who was recently re-signed, who's probably the best offensive lineman in that group. That being said, I mean, that's, yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there. Offensive line is going to be the biggest weakness for the Bucs this year. Luckily, we have a quarterback in Jameis Winston who is able to get the ball out quickly. That's what, you know, that's one of the facets of his game. I mean, he's able to make the offensive line look a lot better than it really is. And I think that's why some of the offensive line got a lot of credit last year, is because Winston made them look better than they actually are. You think about two rookies on the offensive line, you're like, well, how the hell did they get that job done? Well, yeah, it's probably the guy that's up behind center for you.
Yeah, you're right. He really does have the ability to sort of extend plays sort of in a Ben, actually, I was about to say Ben Roethlisberger. Now that I think about it, he's got a lot in common with Ben Roethlisberger on and off the field, actually.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, definitely.
Sorry.
But we won't get into that.
You know, so I think a lot of people are expecting Mike Evans to really break out this year. I'm shocked. Like, I was looking at the depth chart before doing research, and I forgot that Vincent Jackson was even on the team. Like, I've done all these fantasy drafts. His name doesn't even come up. Probably in a 20-team league, his name won't come up.
Right.
Akiva, he was drafted in my league. You got to get out of your 8-person.
Well, I have no. I mean, I'm actually doing a 20-team draft right after this.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He will definitely go.
I'll let you know where he goes. But anyway, the point is, if Jackson, who's now 33 years old, is on the decline, who could be a second or even a third, if Jackson's okay this year, target for Jameis in this offense?
You know, funny thing about Vincent Jackson is I listen to the I think, doesn't every team have those local radio post-game shows where they kind of go on the radio? Yeah.
But can I tell you how strange I am?
What's
that? If, like, I'm a Jets fan, if the Jets ever win a big game, or even if there's, like, a really horrific playoff loss, like the Vikings, you know, Blair Walsh lost to the Seahawks last year, like, you turn on, I guess, through the internet, like, the Minnesota radio station when they're, like, crying and, like, listen to the first 10 calls. I don't know. That just made me think of it. But that's actually a fun thing to do if you're into Schadenfreude.
Maybe I should check that out. I never thought about that. I do like going on like the opposite team's Twitter account and being like, hey, look at all this salt.
Yeah, but Akiva, that would require the Bucs to win a playoff game.
So yeah, that's true.
Well, you can do the regular season also. I mean, does Tampa Bay have, like, you know, talk radio? I guess they do.
We have talk radio, yeah. It's not good talk radio, but it's talk radio. God damn it. Vincent Jackson's an old man, and it feels weird me saying that now, being 29. I'm almost his age, and you know, to say he's an old man would be to say that I'm an old man. But
you'd be the football, oldest. You'd be the oldest person on the Rams this year,
right? Oh yeah, that's true. But yeah, he's football old, and he goes through a lot not in the off season, but week to week to kind of keep himself healthy. So it's a big question mark as to whether he can stay on the field, because obviously he didn't last year. So you have Mike Evans, that who's going to be your number one, number two. So yeah, like you said, the big question, who's going to be the guy after him? Adam Humphries has shown some promise in preseason and in training camp. He actually returned a kickoff for a touchdown in this last preseason game. And, you know, he's a short white guy. So everybody's like, oh, hey, Wes Welker. You know, next Wes Welker over here, but I don't know. I think he's got some holes in his game, and I think this is a big part of the Buccaneers that's going to be another problem for us. I mean, you've got Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans, and then just a cliff of talent. And on the other side,
are you expecting anything from Seferian Jenkins?
Seferian Jenkins, I don't know.
He's the Eric Ebron of the NFC.
The official depth chart doesn't even have him as the starter this year. They have a guy named Cameron Brate, who I've never heard of.
Cameron Brate's been looking good in camp, but Austin Seferian Jenkins slowly won back that position from him that he lost in camp. So it has the looks of just like a weakness for us. Austin Seferian Jenkins is a tall guy, and he's touted as being, you know, has this all this natural talent, but the guy's work ethic just isn't there. There was a big to do in the offseason where he basically berated fans via Twitter after he got dismissed from practice. The guy doesn't seem like he has a great work ethic, and it's year three, and it's put up our shut up time for ASJ. And you know, I don't know, man. I don't see a whole heck of a lot coming out of the tight end position from the Bucs. Cameron Brate, you know, Jameis Winston seems to find him when he's in need. But that being said, I still think that's going to be a big weakness for us.
All right. So speaking of weaknesses, let's go to the defense. You know, the Bucs.
Segue.
Well, the Bucs defense seems to have a lot of problems. You know, you look at the front seven, The only elite guy you really have is Gerald McCoy, and even he, I think, last year he would sell out chasing the quarterback, and then they'd be gashed in the running game. And then at edge rusher, obviously that's been a problem for this team. You signed Michael Bennett, that didn't work out. Now they're bringing in Robert Ayers, but you know, again, he's 31 years old, and,
right.
and he's never really been a full-time starter before. So what are they going to do to get pressure on the quarterback?
You know, it's funny you talk about Gerald McCoy, because on my podcast, on Where the Bay, we have a term for guys like Gerald McCoy. And we call him Tampa good. He's good for Tampa. Like he's the best we have. Like Evan Longoria for the Rays. He's Tampa good. He's not actually good. He's Tampa good. So yeah, Gerald McCoy is a Tampa good defensive lineman. And they've went out and got Robert Ayers to try to compliment him and hopefully disrupt things. And he's looked good in preseason. But I mean, I think the big thing here is Noah Spence, who they spent a second round draft pick on this year, and He's looked very good in both camp and in preseason, and
Are the two Spences related or no?
From what I hear, Akeem Spence and Noah Spence not related, but mm-hmm. I think what you're going to see is a slightly better defensive line from last year. I mean, I don't think it's going to make leaps and bounds, but I think we'll be able to get to the quarterback a little bit better than we did in years past. I think. You know, this is going to be one of the best defensive lines we've seen here in a long time, but that's not saying anything because our defensive lines have been terrible. So it'll be slightly better from last year.
Who would you consider the best defender on the team?
On the
best
team?
Player on the defense. Is it Lavonte right. David?
Lavonte David, I used to think, but I mean, I think he's a little overrated. At the, you know, a lot of Bucks fans made a big to-do about Luke Kuechly being rated over Lavonte David, and I'm like, yeah, he's a lot better than Lavonte. Like, there was specifically a play in the last game, or not in the last. Who'd we play? It wasn't the Eagles, but the game after that, it slips my mind. But he had an angle on the guy, and he took a terrible, terrible angle and ended up turning his back to him and giving up a touchdown. And I know it's only preseason, but I don't know about this guy. Like, if you remember the Washington, you like that game, Lavonte David was in perfect position to make a play on the ball for the go-ahead touchdown and completely whiffed on the play. You know, yeah, maybe that's one play, but at the same time, man, I don't know. I got to give it to Gerald McCoy. I mean, I can't give it to anybody else. Maybe Brent Grimes, but, you know, he's getting up there too, but yeah.
You're gonna be sick of Brent Grimes by week two, trust me.
Well, you're gonna be sick of Mika Grimes also.
Actually, we had Mika Grimes on our podcast. She's awesome.
Well, by the way, she is welcome to come on our podcast. I don't think she'll come on our podcast, if you know what I mean, but
yeah. She talked a lot of shit about the Dolphins, but she was nice to us, so
yeah. Not just the Dolphins.
You had Miko on your podcast?
Yeah, we did.
Oh man, she's so salty. Her podcast is like crazy. If you listen to, I mean, it's just a train wreck.
I listened to the episode where she had the Dolphins fans on, and I thought it was kind of hilarious. It's, you know,
yeah.
You,
I mean, it's funny. It's funny. I can't stop listening.
The best way to get under an NFL fan's skin is just to start talking bad about their quarterback. I mean, you know, that's the most insecure spot, because like, oh my quarterback's the best. Because if your quarterback really is bad, then that means you just wasted 5 years on this guy supporting him. So,
we really haven't discussed Lovie's successor, Dirk Cutter. So, you know, give us your first impressions on your new coach and how you think that's going to wind up.
To me, this is like another Mark Trestman, Mike Martz kind of hire. It's you know, the guy did good on offense, so hey, maybe he'll be a good coach. I don't know. The jury's still out on the guy. You know, he says a lot of the right things in the media, and a lot of the fans seem to enjoy what he says and his kind of shoot from the hip attitude. But you know, we'll see. We'll see what becomes of him. He's been making the right moves so far. You know, there's accountability now on the team that there hasn't been before. Specifically when he dismissed ASJ from practice and you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I think that we finally kind of have a little bit of accountability, and I think the guy's getting a you know, he's. Who knows, man?
The truth is, I kind of like the hire. He has a bunch of head coaching experience, not amazing head coaching experience, and he's been a coordinator literally everywhere in the country.
Right.
So I think you could have done a lot worse, and there is, you know, there is potential for him to really, you know, I feel like he does some really interesting things on offense. Who's your defensive coordinator?
Mike Smith from the Falcons.
Okay. So, I mean, you have a competent defensive coordinator.
Right.
I think Carter's the type
of guy. As long as he doesn't take over clock management.
Yeah, if you keep him away from deciding, actually, you're making game management decisions, he'll be okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Came out of
London. Kyle, we usually don't discuss special teams too much on this podcast, but I think we obviously need to speak about Aguayo a little bit. You know, he had a good game against the Browns this week, I saw. He didn't miss any kicks, finally. But even when he wasn't struggling, the fact is you still took a kicker in the second round of the NFL draft.
Yes, we did, my friends.
Someone's enjoying a beverage. About
that's
that.
Me. Yes, we did.
That's what happens when you take a kicker.
That's what happens when
round.
You take a kicker in the second, when you trade up into the second round to take a kicker.
If I'm the Jets GM, I would happily trade right now our second round pick for the Bucks second round pick. No question.
You don't like your fourth string quarterback?
I don't even need your pick back. I just want to get rid of Hackenberg.
I was not a fan of this pick initially, and for obvious reasons.
Oh my God,
I
mean, he's starting to justify it.
The knee-jerk reaction of it was just, you know, this is bad. Let me proceed to justify it, because let me just list off a few jabronis.
He hasn't abused anybody like the Giants kicker, so he's got that going.
Yeah, he's probably a decent quarterback. Human being.
Do you guys remember the 2007 draft, you know, the one Adrian Peterson was drafted in?
Yeah.
Our first, our third overall pick is now dead. He's dead. Our second pick in that draft, he
you gotta
is
tell us who's
he's
dead. If you say the guy's dead,
that's Gaines Adams.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Forgot.
R.I.P. Gaines.
Yeah. You know what? Browns fans would still rather have him than Brady Quinn.
Wait. And also, Kyle. You know I believe the last team to pick a kicker in the second round.
The Jets.
I could be wrong. Are my Jets who picked Mike Nugent, who's still in the league, has had a totally fine career. And if you asked, I think it was Terry Bradway who selected him, he probably would say that was a mistake. Even though Nugent's had a totally fine career, he's been in the league. You know, it's going to be his 13th season or his 12th season. How many kickers in the league could you justify that pick for? Like, let's say you got Gostkowski.
Right.
Maybe. Like Vinatieri, but
yeah.
You know, he was drafted 25 years ago.
Nobody else is taking him in the second or third or fourth round. It's marginal value.
And here's the problem. Because you can't keep two kickers, and I said this to Chester before he started being terrible. We may have said this on the draft podcast, but like if he has a couple bad weeks and you want to cut your kicker, like, you know, 3 weeks into his career, that's your second round pick.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's nowhere to stash him unless you put him on like the IR with a pretend injury, which I guess you can do. But
no, we're stuck.
Don't you remember in Gramatica, the Bucks kicker got injured celebrating a kick?
Yeah. It was a few weeks after his brother did the exact same thing.
Yeah,
in
there was Bill and Martine. Yeah,
yeah.
There's actually a lot more to talk about the Bucks than I thought, but we really gotta let's move to the next team because we're gonna go 5 hours.
Fair here. Enough. But I'm not trying to justify it. But we've made some terrible picks in the second round before, so you know, let's take a kicker, see what happens.
I mean, you guys have made bad decisions.
We're gonna blow this kick anyway.
Round.
So.
Yeah, yeah. We screw up all the time. This is nothing to us.
I mean, the same person who made the decision, you know, hired Greg Schiano. So.
Exactly, yeah. And Levy right. Smith. And Raheem. Okay, well, yeah.
That's just all the last 24 months.
All right, so let's move on to the Saints now. 7-9 last year, which is sort of their equilibrium now. They've been 7-9 three of the last 4 years. They would have been 8-8 if they would have beaten Carolina. I was actually at that game, which was an amazing game, obviously. You know, tons of points. The first ever two-point conversion return the other way, I think. A lot of exciting things in that game, including ultimately a Carolina win. Well, let's start with this offense, obviously, Andrew. Your offense is basically what's been the driving force throughout the Sean Payton era. Whereas we said that there was a bad offensive line in Tampa, you guys have a great offensive line. You still have Drew Brees clicking. To me, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of holes on this offense at all. But tell me if there is one that I'm missing.
No, yeah, I actually think Saints Twitter and Saints fans in general are kind of melting down with concern over the performance of the offensive line through the preseason.
Oh.
So
okay, so
yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the Saints,
to be fair, I think the Saints internet in general has a lot of meltdowns recently.
They do, yeah, no question about it.
You know what it is? It's like they're sort of like the athlete that like sticks around for one too many Olympics, and they don't realize like they won the gold, you know, three Olympics ago. And the Bronze 8 Olympics go.
And they only won the gold because they Tanya Harding, the team that should have won the gold that year. Let's be honest.
That's
here.
True also.
Right. They're like Justin Gatlin 4 years from now.
Right, no, and that, well, Tyson Gay, if you want to make a super nerdy analogy. But but even worse, it's like, and then four years ago, they sort of lost in the first round. Like they were knocked out at the first heat. And now they think that was a fluke. But really, it's been like, you look back and it's been a zillion years since they were good. And Saints fans, because Breeze is still pretty good, sort of have not come to terms with the fact that this era's over and they haven't. This is like year seven of them doing nothing about it.
Well, I think you got to realize in 2006, that's when Sean Payton and Drew Brees came on board. And so there have been no changes. That's really when you think about that era of success and the, you know, the kind of the success that they had, that they put themselves in that sort of became the expectation for a little while in New Orleans, that they were going to the playoffs every year. They haven't parted ways with that head coach or that quarterback. They're still there. And so I think it's a constant thought process of, man, these guys are elite, and if we can just get the right pieces around them, we're set up to get right back to where we were before.
Yeah, I mean, well, their defense last year, if I'm not mistaken, you know, by some metrics, was the worst since the 80s. So I think it's not crazy thinking, argument, right?
A lot of people say that they have the worst defense ever. There is a legitimate claim that that was actually the case for the Saints last year.
Right. So, I mean, ultimately, even though I would hire Sean Payton in a second to call my plays, like, the buck has to stop with him at a certain point. You definitely can't blame Breeze
for the
defense. You definitely can't. No, I mean, I think if you look at every year since Breeze and Sean Payton have been together, the Saints have been number one in the NFL on offense all but 3 or 4 years of that 10-year period. And last year, I believe they were second. The year before, they were first. And those are 7-9 teams. So I think, you know, look no further than the defense. That's clearly what's costing them games.
But you look at the offseason for this defense. You know, first of all, you've been very unlucky. I think the plan was that, you know, moving to a standard 4-3, Hoailu Kikaha, I can't pronounce his name, but he was supposed to start at the end, and then I think he tore his ACL. Keenan Lewis, the cornerback, I think he's had more injuries probably than, like, I'm like looking here, leg injury, hip injury, sports hernia injury. Meanwhile, you have Kyle Wilson. He's been placed on IR with a torn labrum. Jarius Byrd still recovering from an injury. Middle linebacker is a disaster. Pretty much the only upgrade, I think, is the fact that you got rid of Brandon Browner, who literally had the lowest grade for a cornerback last year in Pro Football Focus's 10-year history.
Yeah. Yeah, he broke the NFL record for most penalties in a season. The Saints gave up the most touchdowns in NFL history, passing touchdowns ever, for a season. And, you know, obviously Browner played a huge part in that. So, and also it was an NFL record for opposing quarterbacks rating going up against the Saints. So, yeah, I believe for the year it was a rating of over 110 rating points. And so basically any quarterback that was playing the Saints last year was performing at a Hall of Fame level statistically. And we played. There were some guys like Brian Hoyer. I mean, anyway.
Yeah, but you also gave up 4.9 yards a carry, which is worse than the league.
Yes, yes. There was also the poor.
So, other
defense.
Than Cameron Jordan, like, what is there to look forward to on this defense?
Well, I do think so. It starts with pass rush, and it really was non-existent last year. And while Cam Jordan's a double-digit sack guy and a Pro Bowler, the Saints had no pressure up the middle. And so I think that's where you invest a first-round pick in Sheldon Rankins, and you get a guy like Nick Fairley, who has been phenomenal this preseason. I know that in general, a name like Nick Fairley probably doesn't excite a lot of NFL fans. But when you compare him to what the Saints had last year, it's a significant upgrade. And now I think you just see in these preseason games, especially in the first quarter when the starters are in, the pocket collapses a little bit more. They're getting a little bit more interior pressure, and it's enough to redirect these quarterbacks into the edge pressure that they have. And that makes a huge difference, because now it's not like quarterbacks are just playing 7-on-7 and waiting for receivers to get wide open with all the time they need. And then it really doesn't matter who you have back there at cornerback, whether they're great or terrible. If you give a quarterback enough time, the guys are too good in this league, and they'll pick you apart.
Yeah, I mean, do you have any, like, is there any reason for optimism? You know, Dennis Allen is charged with taking over the defense. I guess he started last year after they fired Rob in November, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, if you have the worst defense ever, you have a very high-priced coach who and a really aging QB, you have to go and, you know, even if it's going to cost you $3, $4 million, you know, steal some defensive coordinator. I don't know, steal some college team's coach and make him your defensive coordinator. Like, Dennis Allen has 1 year of coordinator experience. You know, he was an assistant on your abominable defense last year. Not exactly like a, you know, he was 8 and a zillion as the Raiders coach. You know, not exactly like some stellar defensive resume. Do you have any faith in Dennis Allen?
I do, you know, just because, first of all, he really was the top assistant under Peyton before he left. So he, you know, he was a big part of that staff that won a Super Bowl. And he, so I think he's already got some institutional credit, if you will, based on how well he was as a as an assistant before he left. And then obviously he went to the Broncos, did a tremendous job as their defensive coordinator, so much so that he got a head coaching job. And, you know, I think you give him a pass being a head coach of the Raiders because no one's really been successful in that job for decades.
Well, the guy who came after him is looks like he's doing a better job.
Yeah, it looks like that that ship is finally turning a little bit. But, no, I think Dennis Allen is a guy that, I mean, you're already noticing some significant differences between him and Rob Ryan in a positive way. And I think most significantly, Rob Ryan at times was just so cluttered and so complex. And, you know, I attribute some of this to the Saints having a lot of young players, but they were so slow with substitutions, so slow with audibles, and guys just not being in the right place when the ball was snapped. And that's how so many teams were able to take advantage of them last year. And the big difference with Dennis Allen is he is more simplistic and he is prepared. And he has his guys prepared. And yes, they might get beat. And yes, there might they might still be devoid of talent. But at least they're going to be lined up in the right place. The play calls are going to get in on time. And you know that was a big reason why they added James Laurinaitis. You know, he might not be the best linebacker in the league. And he's aging. But they felt like they needed a guy that was an extension of the coach that could, you know, from an IQ standpoint, manage, kind of relay the play call to the players on the field, get players in position. That was a big thing for this defense last year and why they struggled so much. So, listen, I'm not selling the guy as transforming this into a top 10 defense by any means, but I think those things alone will make it at least improved compared to the worst ever.
All right, so now let's move. We have I have in my apartment, because I have the Saints at 21, let's move to number 22, one spot below them, the Falcons, their big rivals. So, Gavin, let's talk to you about the Falcons for a second.
Wait, can I give a hot take, Chester, about the Falcons?
Yeah.
The team in the league so far this offseason with the least buzz. I've heard less about the Falcons than any other team in the NFL this offseason.
Isn't Matt Ryan the least buzzy quarterback in the NFL?
Always, but I feel like less so, although there's almost this, like, hey, why did he get worse? And is he, like, on, you know, is there something wrong with him sort of thing? But nobody's even talking about that, even though maybe they should be.
Okay. No one's talking about it here either. Okay, so let's jump to
sorry.
Yeah, so let's jump right to that the 2015 season for the Falcons. It was sort of a, you know, two different years. You start 6-1 obviously, and it was around that point of the year when Akiva and I did our rank at the NFL head coaches podcast, and so Akiva had Dan Quinn like 6th. And then you turn on and lost 6 in a row. And when you actually look at that 6-1 start, it's a little bit of a mirage. All 6 of the wins came against the two worst divisions in football, which was the AFC South and the NFC East. Now, I mean, look, you did stomp Houston by like 27. And so, you know, obviously that's an impressive game no matter how you slice it. But during that 6-game losing streak, you lost to the Bucs at home. You lost to the 49ers, who were possibly the worst team in the NFL. You lost to the Bucs a second time. You lost Carolina, which is a legit team, obviously, but you lost 38-0. So they looked really, really, really ugly. And then you had a couple wins to salvage it at the end of the year.
Okay, so tell me, coming into the 2016 season, do you see these Falcons as more of the team that started 5-0 last year, or the team that followed that up with the 0-6 run in the middle of the year?
One of the most frustrating things about being an Atlanta Falcons fan is the fact that this team is almost always both of those things within the same season. Sometimes they look like world beaters. Sometimes they look completely incompetent. I think that this year they take a step forward, but because they play statistically the hardest schedule in the league, it could be a situation where the team plays better but has a worse record to show for.
Let's look at the offense overall. Last year, you guys were 23rd in DVOA, and that's taking into account the fact that you got a career year from Devonta Freeman, a career year and a completely healthy year for Julio Jones, which I think is only the second time that he's played all 16 games. So
And again, even with all that, you were only 23rd in DVOA. So is there a way that this offense can improve to at least average, if not above average? Or
I think another year in the zone blocking scheme for Devontae Freeman will be helpful. I think that he has established himself as the best of our running backs, which is not to say that our running backs are world beaters by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that he's the best of the bunch. And I don't see any reason that he could continue to develop in the zone blocking scheme. I think asking for a repeat of Julio's season last year would be asking a lot of any receiver, because last season for Julio was one for the ages for NFL wide receivers in general. I think what we do have coming into this season that we didn't have last year is a more complete receiving game. As much as I love Roddy White, he got very old very fast last year, and it became very difficult for him to get separation from receivers. And we saw flashes of the old Roddy White, but there was no consistency. I think that we overpaid for Mohamed Sanu as our number two receiver. I think that he took advantage of a team that absolutely had a need for a number two receiver, and being probably the best available number two on the market at the time. But I think that he will provide Julio with the ability to draw some of that coverage away, because teams just didn't have to pay attention to Roddy last year. We also have Justin Hardy, who has stepped into the slot role. He's had another year to grow, to learn, and this is a guy that had either the most or the second most receptions in NCAA football history at East Carolina. So he's a sure-handed guy. He runs routes well. So I think that the offense overall can be better. The thing that concerns me the most about the offense is the coordinator wearing the headset, and it's Kyle Shanahan. If you follow Kyle Shanahan's career, usually his second year with a quarterback, his second year with a team, things get kind of rough. Matt Schaub had a severe downturn in the second year of Shanahan's term in Houston. If they can give Matty the keys to the huddle, the keys to the field, let him go out there and run the offense within Shanahan's system, I think that this offense takes a jump forward. Otherwise, if we get more of the Kyle Shanahan play calling that we've seen through the years, I'm a little nervous about what happens next.
And what about, I mean, it looks like Matt Ryan's best years were really when Tony Gonzalez was there. And since he's left, I mean, you talked about you've added Sanu and you've added a couple of other receivers, but is there a tight end who, obviously nobody's going to be as good as Tony G, but is there any kind of tight end who can be a real weapon for this team?
Jacob Tammy is serviceable. I wouldn't yeah. say that he's great, but you can target him four or five times a game. He'll hold on to the ball. He can throw some decent blocks, but certainly nothing to the extent of Tony Gonzalez. I think they had some very high hopes for Levine Toilolo when they drafted him. He's a 6'8 guy. He can run in space pretty well, but he just doesn't have the hands to be the receiving threat that they need. The tight end position is definitely one that they need to upgrade, and I think because of that, that's where you're going to see a lot of the buzz surrounding the two running back sets that they've been talking about throughout preseason and experimenting with. They want to run Devontae Freeman and Coleman and Ward out of the backfield in multiple back sets to have them as receiving options. They've also got Patrick DeMarco at the fullback spot, and while the fullback spot's not something that typically gets used a lot in today's NFL, DeMarco has really good hands for a fullback. That's an important qualifier for a fullback. But in lieu of a dominant tight end, I think you're going to see some creativity with the running back situation and how they use them as receivers.
And you're confident that it's going to be more of the Devonta Freeman from the first half of last season, like the games against Dallas and Washington and Tennessee, than the guy in the second half of the season, like the guy who had, you know, 12 carries for 12 yards against San Francisco or some of those other games down the stretch. I'm actually looking the second half of the year. He did not have a single game where he averaged even 3.4 yards a carry, other than the Indy game where he only carried the ball three times.
That's the biggest concern about Freeman, is his durability over the course of a season. He runs very aggressively. It's almost like he seeks out contact, like he has something to prove. He's never going to be a dominant power runner like Michael Turner was his first couple of seasons in Atlanta. He doesn't have the elusive ability that Ward Dunn had. But he can be, like I said, he's the best of an average group of running backs. Would it be nice to have a dominant playmaker or someone that was a threat to break a huge run every time he touched the ball? Sure. But given the choice between Devonta Freeman grinding out a few yards and giving us some third and short opportunities, or having Coleman be a 50-50 shot to give the ball away every time he touches it, I'm still happy with Freeman.
All right, so let's jump to the defense now. Like the previous two teams, that seems to be where you guys have much bigger holes. Gavin, you told us in April you wanted the Falcons to draft Reggie Raglan, who might end up being a solid pick. Of course, we don't know because you know he went two spots later to the Bills and has already suffered a huge injury in training camp, so his rookie season is sort of destroyed. But if you remember, you actually didn't respond in time, so we ended up going with a different Falcons fan in our official 32 fans mock draft. And that guy, Harry Schaefer, who I know is a listener, so hey, Harry, how's it going? He wanted guard Cody Whitehair, who ended up going 39 picks later. So that probably wouldn't have been a high-value pick. But instead, who the Falcons did go with, you know, speaking about low value, is Florida safety Keanu Neal. I just want to read a quick Keanu Neal burn from Football Outsiders. This is what they write here. They say the Seattle defensive blueprint, which of course is what Dan Quinn has brought to Atlanta, demands up-the-middle players who can cover and tackle. Florida safety Keanu Neal was a surprise first-round pick to fill the void the Falcons had at the position last season. If you want to imagine Neal's college play, picture Cam Chancellor, except picture a Cam Chancellor who doesn't make any tackles and also cannot defend the pass. There you go. That's the college Neal experience. All the physical dimensions, none of the production.
And their first-round pick last year, Vic Beasley, can't even get on the field, basically, right?
Yeah, so defend these picks. That's where I'm going. Because this defense isn't good, so...
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the Keanu Neal draft pick. I know that fits the physical mold of what Dan Quinn had in Seattle with Cam Chancellor. And a big part of Quinn's offense is having that safety that can come in and lay in big hits. But at the same time, the report on Keanu Neal is he has the size, he has the speed, he has the strength. He doesn't tackle particularly well, and he doesn't cover particularly well. My hope was that we would address the pass rush a little bit more through the draft this year and try to develop someone. Instead, we went with a safety. I think that, especially with his injury, and he's going to miss, I think, the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, and they went out and signed Deshaun Goldson, it'll give him an opportunity to watch the game and see how important it is to be in the right place at the right time. And hopefully that can get him on the right track, give the coaches some time to work with him on the things that he's lacking. Vic Beasley Jr., I'm not worried about him at all. He played hurt a lot last year, didn't talk about being hurt, wasn't griping, complaining. He's healthy going into the season this year. They've moved him back to the linebacker spot where he can use his speed a little bit more instead of trying to bull people over because he's not a big guy by defensive lineman standards. So I think you'll actually see Beasley's pass rush get a lot better this season coming from the weak side linebacker spot as opposed to trying to rush as a speed defensive end.
All right, Akiva, let's, for a palate cleanser, we've just discussed three terrible defenses. So can we talk about a good one for a minute?
Sure. You want to talk about the Vikings?
Well, not on this podcast. Tony, let's talk about the Panthers defense for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, the front seven obviously loaded, you know, arguably the best front seven in the league. It's not just Luke Kuechly. You got Kawan Short and Coney Ealy and Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson. I mean, all these guys could be Pro Bowlers, basically. But my question...
They all are.
Yeah. But my question is about the secondary. Pro Football Focus ranks this the 32nd, the dead last secondary in the NFL. Obviously, you had a couple of significant departures. Peanut Tillman to making funny YouTube videos. Norman to Washington. So my question is, what are they going to do to improve the secondary? I mean, part of the problem, I think, is that you have like such good linebackers and such good coverage linebackers, but you can't really keep all three on the field when teams are trotting out three or four receivers, especially, you know, teams in your division with like Drew Brees throwing, for example.
Well, yeah, I think that's been the traditional kind of position is that you can't have all three linebackers out when you're going against such a pass-heavy league, but... You know, they went out and drafted a particularly special player in Shaq Thompson last year who we didn't see, you know, make a huge impact last year. But every time he was on the field, he did contribute and make plays. You know, if you went back to the NFC Championship game where they just pummeled the Cardinals, you know, Shaq Thompson's in coverage against slot receivers all day. I mean, he's locking up Larry Fitzgerald. And certainly Fitzgerald isn't the guy he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But at the same time, you know, that's a pretty notable accomplishment. You know, there are a lot of concerns when it comes to the Panthers secondary is that, you know, you don't got anybody that has any real proven experience to be or any experience at all.
I think the average like hardcore NFL fan has heard of maybe one player in their whole secondary.
Yeah, and that maybe is Ben Wickery because he's got a funky name.
Maybe Ben. I was thinking Kirk Coleman, but he was my second guy.
Yeah, and that's because maybe, you know,
Coleman's on the Eagles for a while.
Yeah, and then he went to Kansas City. And Coleman has been a very good addition for the Panthers. They just extended him, in fact, and he had 8 interceptions last year, and he was able to, you know, I think he tied when he was in Kansas City. He played something like 300 snaps and have four interceptions that year. So he tends to be a ball hawk. Look, this is just the Carolina Panthers of old, is that it's really the same secondary we've always had, and we have never really invested too much in that. And, you know, Josh Norman, while last year he did have a phenomenal year and he finished the year before very strong, is that that's all he's done as a player. So it's not like he's got like a, you know, 5 or 6 years of being a top cornerback there. And pretty much the Panthers secondary is all predicated on the front seven doing a good enough job that those guys can manage. And that's how it's been since Dave Gettleman's been there. And I think now that Cam Newton is stepping up and becoming, you know, a league MVP, we have the offense to maybe get away with it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We're starting with defense here. We'll get to offense in a second. But I want to talk about special teams, because you guys made a really bizarre trade today. Speaking of Dave Gettleman, what do you think about this punter trade where you're giving up a 4th-round pick for Andy Lee, a good punter? But I mean, he's a punter. I would, if it was my team, I'd be pulling my hair out.
Well, I mean, it's not like drafting one in the second or trading up for it.
But this is a punter. This is even worse than a kicker.
Well, you know, it's a real weakness for the Panthers right now, is that we lost our Brad Nortman, who was our punter. He went to Jacksonville in free agency. And, you know, he wasn't even very good last year. He was excellent the year before. But
I mean, you could find someone off the street, you know, a different guy every week. Eventually you'll find somebody who could, you know.
Yeah, you would. I don't know. Is that, yeah, I mean, I think on the face of it, it sounds like a 4th-round pick sounds so devastating, or sounds so much.
And
if
it was like the Browns, you know, the opposite of the deal, I'd say, you know, you could say like, well, the Browns were going to mess up that pick anyway, but Gettleman could find someone good in the 4th round.
Right. I mean, and I think those are all kind of, you know, just logical things looking at it from a draft standpoint. But what I think it really signals, and it's not tremendously upsetting, is that, you know, we had a problem with it. It was clear in camp. I mean, the coaches were coming out saying they couldn't kick from the left hash. You saw them just punting duds in the preseason. And the way the Panthers want to play football, you know, I mean, I think the special team shouldn't be underestimated as the third side of the ball. And you know, maybe it says for me is that there's some immediacy for the Panthers.
Well, doesn't
and,
it feel like
with
doesn't
this
it feel
bunch
like
they
a
have
move,
this year?
Yeah, doesn't it feel like a move of a team that thinks they're winning the Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the move, the one piece that has to change it, you know, I mean, that's, I don't know. Is that
we're not saying that it's going to bring them. It's just like in his mind, like why else is he making the trade other than like,
yeah, I mean,
oh, we
I
have
think,
no punter and let's just all hands on deck this season.
Well, I think, yeah, I do think it says that, hey, we got a group of guys that have a legitimate opportunity to return to the Super Bowl, and we can't let, you know, just trying to Band-Aid this position, you know, maybe get in the way of that. But, you know, there's some other positions that I wouldn't be surprised if Carolina went out and addressed as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, switching to the offensive side of the ball for a second. So for the second straight year, an NFC team with arguably the worst receiving group in the league almost wins the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Cam Newton happened.
Yeah. So
yeah, they had 50 touchdowns.
So now this is definitely not the worst receiving group in the league anymore, because you're adding Kelvin Benjamin. But how do you see, obviously Greg Olsen is locked in as, you know, the top 3 or 4 tight ends in the league at the very worst. But you know, how do you see the receiving group looking this offseason?
You know, I don't know if in single coverage, if you put out Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess out there, there's going to be 2 corners in the league that could stop him.
Oh, come on. Funchess is so slow, he could be stopped by a linebacker.
Yeah, Funchess runs
right,
like a 4.9.
Right,
and by the way, Benjamin's,
you know,
really
the
slow,
thing,
too.
Is it's about,
Benjamin's
it's
one
about
of the slowest
of them
receivers.
6'5", man, is yeah. That these guys are physical. It is that they don't need to. First, look, Jerry Rice ran a 4.7 or some mess like that. It was terrible.
Yeah, it's a different league, though.
Yeah.
Also,
but
I don't think you
guys want
to compare Devin Funchess to Jerry Rice.
No, and that's not what it was meant to be. But what I'm saying is these guys are physically imposing to the point of, man, they'll take your lunch money from you, particularly Benjamin. You know, Funchess is head and shoulders above where he was last year. He came in. You know, if you think about it, both of those guys, like Funchess is only like 21 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a baby.
He's also going to be facing, not that I want to spend too much time talking about Devin Funchess, but like Funchess is going to be facing the third cornerback even in, on second down a lot of times, just because so frequently Greg Olsen draws like a top tier secondary player to cover him.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is like if that was a position of concern last year, it is our position of strength this year, and that is that Benjamin is just enormous. He's a manimal. Funchess is tall. You know, I think I'm the least fan of Ted Ginn Jr. on the earth, and he even had 10 touches last year. You know, I mean, if he could, I mean, he should have had 20. He left 10 out on the field that he dropped, but. These guys, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is that like for any other year, you would say, hey, this is, you don't have to worry about the receiving group. And look, is that Denver said that in the Super Bowl last year, is that they just said, look, is we can handle you guys one-on-one and we're just going to pin our ears back and go after Cam Newton. And so with adding Kelvin Benjamin to the mix, adds a bunch, but you know, there's some other guys too, that are really fighting hard to maybe make an impression. And Demir Byrd from the University of South Carolina, he was undrafted free agent last year. He's only 5'9 and weighs 185 pounds soaking wet, but he runs a 4.240. He's got world-class speed, and you know, they've been working him out on the punt team. He's had a phenomenal camp this year. He stuck around on the practice squad last year. So, you know, I think when you get those big guys, you get some freedom to get creative with the downfield plays.
I'll make a quick Panthers prediction. I think Jonathan Stewart, I think the wheels start falling off this year. He's almost 30 years old. He had a really long, you know, after splitting so many carries with D'Angelo, he finally has to take the load himself. Then he has to shoulder the load in the playoffs himself. It's a lot. You know, a lot of 29, 30-year-old running backs, it just go one season they have it, the next season they're totally shot. It wouldn't shock me if he's just completely finished.
You know, for Jonathan Stewart, it's always about injuries. It's difficult for him to finish the season. And he doesn't have the explosion that he used to. But man, when he's out there, he produces. And but the problem is can he be out there for 16 or 19 games or whatever you need him to be?
He's a little bit like a pitcher. I don't know if you guys are baseball fans. If you're a baseball fan in Carolina, but like. He's a little bit like a pitcher who is always throws 150 innings because he's hurt. Then his team goes to the World Series and he throws 300 innings. He's a little like Matt Harvey-ish. and you don't know what's going to happen the year after. Although, spoiler alert, it usually doesn't work out well. But yeah, I think you have reason for optimism. Chester, are we ready for best in the division?
Yeah. Akiva, we really saved the best for last because these guests of ours, they're really going at it in the Zencaster chat room.
Oh, really? I haven't even noticed.
Okay, so let's segue. Well, that's a good segue to the best. Let's talk about the best in this division.
Let me do it, Chester, because your audio stinks. So work on your audio while I do this.
There's nothing, Akiva, there's nothing to work on. It's perfect.
Chester, don't say it's perfect when no one can hear a word you're saying. Yeah, it's like perfect the way Greg Williams, you know, God will view Greg Williams after 120 years.
Or perfect the way Matt Ryan is.
Yes. All right, so while you perfect your perfect audio,
I'm not perfecting it. It's fine. Okay, carry on.
But no one can hear what you're saying, so you
obviously you can't because you're responding to me.
We're intelligent and we can intuit what you're saying. That doesn't mean we hear you.
Yeah, okay, go.
All I hear is Chester writing, if I had Hitler and Greg Williams in only one bullet. Okay. All right, guys, let's do a little segment we call Best in the Division.
Hitler never knocked Brett Favre out after the whistle.
All right. That was a great joke, except for the bottom third. We couldn't freaking hear one word you said.
We got this. We got Hitler.
Greatest.
One bullet, and it looks like he turned it on himself.
Damn.
All right, who's the best coach in the division? Andrew.
Sean Payton.
Gavin.
It's probably going to get some chuckles, but I'm going to go with Dan Quinn. I think
Tony.
Nice.
Well, I'm going to just keep this rolling. Ron Rivera.
Okay. Kyle, if you say Dirk Cutter,
No.
Should say Kyle Shanahan.
It's between Riverboat Ron and Sean Payton. I think I got to go with Sean Payton because he's at least got a Super Bowl under his belt. He's had sustained winning seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but isn't Payton just riding on his reputation at this point? He's a 7-9 coach year after year. He's basically Jeff Fisher these days. That was harsh. They both empowered Greg Williams, right?
I hope you guys appreciate this is like a marriage where like you always argue and then like people come over and see how crazy your wife or whatever your husband is. And like, oh, finally, I've been proven right. You know, everyone agrees that what you're doing is insane. So this is Chester insisting that his audio is perfect. And you guys are making fun of him. It's really making my day.
When we post the podcast, we'll listen to it. We'll see what it sounds like.
Here's what it sounds like. Sean Payton is a you could have said racist. You could have said anything.
Well, I restrained myself.
And Hitler. Yeah.
He is pretty racist.
Okay. All right, best offense in the division, Gavin.
As much as it pains me to say it, it is the New Orleans Saints.
All right, so let's go to Andrew.
The Saints, definitely.
Kyle.
I'm going Panthers, baby. Dab, dab, dab.
And Tony. Yeah.
I mean, it has to be the Panthers. We got the best player in the NFL.
All right, so we're tied 2-2. Chester, you want to break the tie?
Yeah, I say Carolina also.
Yeah, Carolina too.
To me, Carolina's sweeping these awards.
Best defense. Let's just say Carolina very quickly.
Carolina.
Guys. Okay. All right, you guys ready for the roster game?
Wait, what about quarterback? Yes. Do we all agree it's Cam or?
Oh, yeah. Is there anyone who's debating Drew Brees or Matt Ryan over Cam?
Okay, hold on. Are we saying like currently, right now, as it stands right now?
Not historically.
Okay, Cam. Yeah, Cam. Historically, I would go Brees, but like as it stands right now, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, but. So Cam's the reigning MVP.
All NFC South quarterbacks.
Statistically, it's pretty comparable.
Wait, Andrew. So if you could have one of these quarterbacks for the 2016 season, you'd still rather have Drew Brees?
Nah, I don't know. I think with Cam, there's that extra dimension. I think if you ask me who's the better passer, for me, that's unquestionably Brees. But you know, Cam adds a dimension.
I mean, Cam completed under 60% of his passes last year.
Right.
For most quarterbacks, that gets you lose your job nowadays with that. But I'm not knocking Cam. I'm just saying you can
take away the MVP award.
That's it. Take it away. But can I tell you how sensitive the Saints fans are to Brees? This is probably boring, but I'm going to tell the story. I went on a reality television podcast. And you guys know the show Survivor, the television show Survivor.
Yeah.
That starts 33rd season. So we drafted, we played out on this reality TV podcast, we played out a season of Survivor as played by NFL quarterbacks. And because Survivor has between 16 and 20 cast members, we didn't cast every QB in the league. We sort of did casting as if we were, the producers of the show before we started it. It probably sounds insane, but people actually liked it, and I'm sure it had tens of thousands of listens. Anyway, we did the last cut was Drew Brees, and the most hate emails and Reddit, there was dozens of nasty comments on Reddit of anything I've ever done in my life was leaving Drew Brees off the fake season of Survivor. Saints fans were so horrified. How could you bring Jameis Winston? By the way, if you were a TV producer, who's making better TV, Jameis Winston or Drew Brees?
Jameis.
Colin Kaepernick or Drew Brees?
Oh, yeah.
You're not drafting a QB, to win you a Super Bowl on the island. You want someone to, blow up at the guy next to you.
That's must-see TV.
Exactly. Drew Brees, first of all, you want Eli over him. I don't remember everyone who was cast. Tony Romo is a bigger name.
Oh, yeah.
Jay Cutler, you get Kristen Cavallari for the family visit. I mean, Drew Brees is... I also made a lot of vaccine jokes. All right, Chester, you're bored?
No, I was just being Jay Cutler. But actually, it is relevant to the scenarios.
No, I, whatever. Anyway, the point is Saints fans can be very sensitive.
Smoking a cigarette right now.
All right.
We do have a lot of milquetoast quarterbacks in our division.
Well, yeah, that's Matt
Ryan.
Well,
I think Cam got on the season. Matt Ryan also did not get cast. It was 8 AFC and 8 NFC quarterbacks. Even though you guys have 4 sort of super famous...
Wait,
QB,
doesn't Cam win? Doesn't Cam have to win?
Well, I don't want to spoil the podcast. I'm sure everyone's going to go out and listen to it, but I believe it was an AFC QB who won.
Oh, I'll go listen to it now.
Anyway.
Are we going to do your beloved roster game for the final time in 2016?
Let's start with Kyle.
Got it.
Kyle, tell me everything you know about... No, that guy's too famous. Jude Ajay Barima.
I knew you were going to say that. Jude Ajay Barima, he is our... He's potentially our third cornerback. He's my favorite name to say. I feel like he's been on some other team somewhere, but I can't... I don't know quite where, but I mean, I feel like I've heard Joe Buck say his name at least once, so maybe the Giants. He's been on the Giants, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, that's about all I know about him. My favorite name on the Bucks.
Yeah, that is a good name. He's never played for another team, but it's possible someone else drafted
him. Oh, okay.
Okay, so now for the Panthers, we got Tony.
Fire away.
I need a good one for Tony.
Tony!
It's another Seinfeld reference, by the way.
Tony, who is Jeremy Cash?
Jeremy Cash is the former ACC Defensive Player of the Year. He is a strong safety that played at Duke, while their coach now at Duke is the guy that coached Peyton Manning in college. What is his name?
Cutcliffe.
Cutcliffe. Former defensive player, ACC Defensive Player of the Year. He's
you guys are listing
safety.
Him as a linebacker for what that's worth.
Yes, they are trying to convert. They're trying to put him at linebacker. I still want him to go. We need strong safety help.
I want data on, and if because you know there is this like issue with the NFL that there is no minor league, there's no secondary league. It's not like you could work out kinks in the AFL or something. I want to know the percentage of like players who try switch positions or like you bring in these rugby guys and try and teach them football. And I'm sure if you gave them like 3 years in the minor leagues, they would probably become like starting level players. There's just like you have a few weeks in training camp and then a couple preseason games where snaps have to be divided 90 ways. Like there's no way it's so hard to convert. It happens, obviously. It's so hard to convert guys from, you know, one position to another in the short amount of time they have. Anyway, end rant. You keep going.
Yeah. Thomas Davis, though, speaking of a player that converted positions, was a safety at Georgia who converted to linebacker.
Wasn't Urlacher a safety technically in college also?
It sounds right.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely happens, but I feel like for everyone that works, there's 100 guys that are out of the league that just couldn't do it.
My thing about Jeremy Cash is you guys should all go follow him on Twitter. He's like the nicest. I mean, not for like shock tweets. Like, I mean, he literally could be the nicest person on earth.
Wow.
That's adorable.
Yeah. I mean, like super Jesus guy. Like, I mean, he just is like a guy, head. I mean, for a guy that's going to be practice squad or cut, really good attitude, hard worker, always around the ball. You know, it's a player you want to root for.
All right, Andrew, tell me about Tommy Lee Lewis. Tommy Lee is one word.
Yes, Tommy Lee is one word. He's a very small receiver for the Saints that actually has a good shot at the 53-man roster. I'd say he's kind of the one undrafted.
He's my
rookie.
Height, but I have like 60, 70 pounds on him. So
yeah, he's 5'7". He's really explosive. He is super explosive. So he's shown a little bit in the return game. I believe he went to college at Northern Illinois. Don't quote me on that, but I believe he went there. And he's 5'7", 5'6", and he's just been getting open. He's one of those guys where, like, you can't really justify keeping a guy like that. You're like, why would you keep a small receiver like this? But he keeps getting open. He keeps making plays.
I feel like Hard Knocks would love him if you guys were on Hard Knocks.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things where in the third and fourth quarter of preseason, there's a flag every other play. Your quarterback isn't that good. The offensive line can't hold their blocks. So, I mean, it's really hard to make plays in the third and fourth quarter. And he's really the only guy that's been doing it for the Saints. So you might actually hear his name at some point in the regular season this year.
All right, that's pretty good. All right, and let's finish this off with Gavin and his Atlanta Falcons. Oh, I like this name. Tell me about Nordley Cappy.
Honestly, you have chosen one of the guys that I know very little about. I know he went to Akron University, and that's really about it. If you would have asked me to place a bet on whether Nordley Cappy was even on our team or not, I probably would have opted with not. So, unfortunately, I'm going to be the guy on this panel that doesn't know my roster as well as the other three. I have no idea who Nordley Cappy is.
Yeah, he's a defensive end from Akron. Nordley, we're going to do some research on Nordley Cappy. You know, he's like a summer signing, which is never a good... He was on the Ravens practice squad last year. Never a great sign when you were like, you know, they didn't like right after... Like everyone in March and April was like, nah, we don't need Nordley Cappy on our 90-man roster. But now it's like, all right, we just caught her a backup punter. But how about this? Here's a tweet. Dan Quinn specifically pointed out the play of Wes Schweitzer and Nordli Cappi as guys who stood out last night. But he also got hurt in practice a couple days ago. So not sure he's making the team. You know, we've done this segment 64 times, or maybe we didn't start it the first week, but almost 64 times, Chester. And it's still perfect. We've never missed once. It has never once been a hit.
I was just going to say, on the NFC West podcast, we were talking about all the Cromarties that are going to be in the league in a few years.
Yeah.
Right? When Antonio's brood grows up. I was flying back from Minneapolis about two or three summers ago, and there was a guy in front of me in the security line who, you know, usually if you're like a professional athlete and you're traveling, you're not going to make it obvious in your wardrobe. But if you're the guy who was just, you know, a summer invite to camp, you will. So this guy, not only was he wearing a full Vikings getup, like tracksuit, and carrying a Vikings bag, he also had his Vikings name tag around his neck, which he clearly did not need to have outside the facility. And he was a Cromartie. That's all. That's which is why I remembered. And I quickly looked up on my phone. I Googled him, and he was some like, you know, rookie, you know, college undrafted free agent who the Vikings had brought in. But yeah, so there really are a lot of Cromarties even this generation, and that's before Antonio's, you know, 27 kids.
Okay, that, I mean, I don't know what the segue was because we didn't say the word Cromartie, but thanks for that story.
No, because somebody mentioned that he was a summer. No, just because
you guys are a married couple.
Well, I was gonna edit this out, but maybe I'll leave it in now because I keep.
No, leave it in. It was great. It was great. All right, Chester takes over the schedule portion.
Now, where are you going,
Chester? I got to do some dish. I got to do dishes. My wife's going to be very mad. Thank you, guys. You guys were all great, actually. Oh, 4 for 4. Really good.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. So let's take a look at the schedules now. This is a division. There's obviously not a lot of drama as to who's going to win the division, but those other three teams, I think any of them could grab a wild card. Any of them could go 5-11. There's a big range. So let's see what you guys think of each other's teams. So, Tony, we'll start with you. We'll give you the Bucs. How about that? So week one, the Bucs go at Atlanta. Is that a win or a loss for Tampa Bay?
You know, I think the Bucs are improved this year, so I'd pick the Bucs to win that game.
All right, so win on the road at Atlanta, and then the next week it gets tougher at Arizona.
Arizona, yeah, I mean, right now, as everything stands, Arizona's same powerhouse team, so you would go with them.
All right, then they come home opener against the L.A. Rams.
Man, that's tough. You know, Todd Gurley's such a beast. I have no idea how the Rams are going to look this year with their quarterback, and gosh, I hate to pick them. What did that make them, 2-1 to start? I'll pick the Bucs there for a team coming west to east.
All right, then it gets a lot tougher. They got to face the Super Bowl teams back to back. Week four, they're facing the Broncos at home.
Who knows with the Broncos what type of team they really are this year?
Trevor Siemian.
Northwestern. So, I mean, he's complete four passes in the preseason, and he secured the job. They did it with Peyton Manning, but it was Peyton Manning last year, even though he's not the same old guy. I just don't think the Broncos are going to be as strong, but I'll pick them, I guess, to win on the defense on the road. That's tough. A road game for the Broncos, all defense, but
all right, so give me the Broncos. All right, and then they go at your Panthers on Monday Night Football in week five.
Panthers, I mean,
okay,
clearly.
So 2-3 coming out of the bye, they go at San Francisco.
Yeah, another team that you don't really know much about this year. A lot of I'll take the Bucs on the road there.
Okay, then they come home and they face the Raiders.
Yeah, Raiders supposed to be a team on the come this year.
All right, so then they're still at home. They face the Falcons, who they already beat on the road. That's on Thursday night.
You know what? As the Falcons, I feel like always stink against the Bucs. So I'll take the Bucs again to sweep the Falcons.
Okay, and then they're still home to face the Bears, trying to climb above 500 for the first time this late in the season in a long time.
Hopefully John Fox get that Bears defense in shape. I'll take the Bears there.
3-3, and you come home with a three-game winning streak, Kyle, but you can only get one of them. So you're 4-5, and now your schedule gets a little bit tougher. You go at Kansas City week 11.
Yeah, I'll take the Chiefs there.
And then you come home to face the Seahawks.
Yeah, the Seahawks.
All right, and then things are starting to spiral out of control. You travel across the country to San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego, though, is kind of a wreck, though. I will take the Bucs on the road against the Chargers.
All right, then they come home to face the Saints for the first time all year on December 11th.
You know, I'll take the Saints to win that.
All right, and then they go at Dallas the next week.
What team are we doing now?
Bucks.
The Bucks. The Bucks? Like, this just keeps going and going. How many games have they played? Like, good Lord.
This year the Bucks are playing 16. They're at the Cowboys. Just give me a win or a loss.
Oh, gosh. I'll take a loss.
All right. And then they're at the Saints the next week on Christmas Eve.
I'll take the Saints.
All right. So they sweep Atlanta, but they get swept by the Saints. And then they finish the season at home against your Panthers. The Panthers probably locked up the division, but they might be playing for seeding. Maybe a bye on the line.
Yeah, the Panthers sweep them.
All right. So, Kyle, a lot of hope in Tampa, but your buddy Tony thinks you're going to go 5-11. How would you react to a 5-11 season from the Bucks?
He scored me one lower than I scored myself. I had him at 6-10. The only game being the difference is that last game against the Panthers. I think we're going to beat the Panthers because the Panthers are going to be resting starters. So we'll take them out that week when they're you know, they've already got the division locked down and everything. So we'll take the Panthers out last week and go 6-10.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm a little surprised. I thought that people were higher on the Bucks this year, but I'll give you a chance.
No. It's the Bucks, man. Come on.
Not after last year.
Yeah, we just fired a coach.
Everybody was high on them last year.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. It was 6-10. Let's be real.
Okay. All right. Okay. So now we're going to keep with you, Kyle, and you're going to tell us how the Falcons are going to do it. Okay. So week one, they're at home, as you know, against your Bucks.
Yeah. Okay. So that's easy. I picked the Bucks to win that game. So obviously I'll pick the Falcons to lose that game.
Okay, and then week two, they go at Oakland.
Oakland's a lot better this year. I'm going to say, actually, you know what? That's at Oakland. I'll say win. Falcons win.
Okay, and then they're at the Saints on Monday Night Football.
At the Saints. That'll be a loss. It's tough to beat the Saints at Saints.
Okay, then they come home to face Carolina.
And that's a loss.
All right, and boy, this schedule gets really tough all of a sudden. Does. At Denver.
Ooh, that's a loss.
At Seattle.
And that's a loss.
All right, so last year they started 6-1. This year they're starting 1-5. Eesh. Then they come home to face San Diego.
Win.
And then they face the Packers the next week at home.
And in an upset, they beat the Packers at home.
Okay, so 3-5, a little momentum.
They're good for an upset, right?
Yeah, they have to go at Tampa the next week.
I think I had that one. I say we were going to win that, so I'll say they lose that. I'm sorry.
All right, so and then 3-6, and then they go at the Eagles before the bye.
At the Eagles, that'll be a win for them.
All right, so 4-6 going into the bye, and then they got a tough schedule out of the bye. The first 2 weeks, they're facing Arizona at home.
Let's go with Arizona.
All right, and then they face the Chiefs at home the next week.
And then they'll beat the Chiefs.
Okay, so 5-7, probably out of it, unless they run the table and hope for a lot of luck. They go at the Rams in week 14.
Let's say, okay, the Rams put in Goff, so Goff's not doing that great, and the Falcons are able to beat the Rams.
All right, so they're keeping hope alive. They come home to face San Francisco in week 15.
Oh, and they're going
to
win that.
All right, so now they're 7-7. They think they have some kind of miracle chance at a wild card, but they got to go into Carolina on Christmas Eve.
And that's a loss.
All right, and then they finish the season at home against their hated Saints, trying to get to 500 again this year.
And they'll win. They'll win that.
All right, 8-8. Gavin, what do you think about the Falcons going 8-8 again this year?
8-8 would be disappointing on one hand. Okay. Because we should have been 10-6 last year. Mike Person cost us two games at the center position with bad snaps. We upgraded to Alex Mack. And so, again, the team should be better. But again, with the schedule that we have, statistically the toughest schedule in the NFL, this team may be better and have a worse record to show for it. My hope is always that we make the playoffs. My hope is always that we have success on the field, have a winning record. But the reality is, 8-8 might be a successful season this year.
All right, Gavin, I know that you hate the Saints. I think last year you said that if you went 2-14, but the two wins were against the Saints, you would take it. Is that right?
I stand by that. That is the
all
only
right, so
acceptable
try and be a little objective here as I have you.
If we sweep the
Saints.
The series against the New Orleans Saints, I will be a happy man at the end of week 17.
All right, so let's go through this schedule now. And, try and be objective. So week one, they start at home against the Raiders.
As much as I like Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, Latavius Murray, the culture that they're bringing to the Raiders out there and turning them around, I still think the Saints are probably a better offensive football team, and I don't know that the Raiders will be able to keep up in a shootout. I'm going to pick the Saints to win on their home opener.
Week two, they go at New York. Last year, obviously, the final in this game was 52-49. So this is going to be another shootout, quite possibly.
Yeah, not a lot of defense to be had in this game. And in a shootout, again, it pains me to say these things, but in a shootout, I'm probably still going to side with Drew Brees and the offense that they have cultivated down there through the years. I'm going to pick the Saints to start 2-0.
All right, so off to a hot 2-0 start, and then they come home Monday Night Football against your Falcons.
Zero objectivity here. They take a loss.
But he's being objective, right, Andrew?
he's still bitter about the sweep last year.
All right, okay, week four, they go at San Diego.
I think that the New Orleans Saints go across the country and get out to a 3-1 start with a win in San Diego.
All right, so that's a real impressive start for the Saints. Then they have an early bye, and then they come out of the bye at home against Carolina. That's another game that was a real high-scoring game last year. I was actually at that game, Carolina at New Orleans.
If you're going to beat Carolina, you need a strong defense, something that can slow down the run game so that the passing game doesn't open up for Cam, or you have to be able to put steady pressure on Cam so that he's not comfortable in the pocket. Once Cam gets flustered, the passes start to sail. He misses wide open receivers. New Orleans doesn't have that. And if you can't slow down what Cam wants to do in the pocket, taking off and running, or the run game that they have, you're in for a very long day. Carolina takes the win here.
All right, yeah, that's the first of 6 weeks with five real tough games coming out of the bye for New Orleans. So they drop to 3-2, then they have to go at Kansas City the next week.
The Chiefs take the win at home.
All right, and then the next week they come home, but they're facing Seattle.
Tall order here. The Seahawks hang a third loss in a row on the Saints.
All right, and then they're desperately needing a win. They go at San Francisco in week nine.
If you need a win in the National Football League this year, the 49ers are the team that you want to play.
All right, then they come back home, and they're facing the Super Bowl champions, the Broncos.
I don't like the quarterback situation for the Broncos right now. But again, just like with Seattle, the defense is what drives this team. And as long as Von Miller's on the field to lead the charge, I think they can do enough to slow New Orleans down. The Broncos take the win.
All right. And then on short rest, they're at Carolina on Thursday Night Football.
Short rest games against a very good football team, not a good recipe. I'm going to take Panthers to complete the sweep against the Saints this year.
All right, and then they come back home for a couple of games that they really need to win to have any shot at the playoffs. The first one is against the Rams.
I like New Orleans to get back on track against the Rams.
All right, and can they get to 500 the next week at home against the Lions?
They can.
Okay, and then they face Tampa for the first time all year.
Yeah.
All the way in week 14.
I don't believe in Jameis Winston. I don't believe in the coaching staff. The Saints beat the Bucs.
All right, and then the next week they're at Arizona, so it doesn't get any easier.
I know this isn't a very surprising pick, but I do like Arizona to make it to the Super Bowl out of the NFC this year. I think Bruce Arians has a great team out there. He's a great coach. I think they finally take a leap forward. And I don't think that on the road in Arizona is a place that New Orleans can go expect to win.
All right, and then they come home to face Tampa for the second time in 13 days.
Sorry, any team that drafts a kicker in the second round after trading up to get him. Yeah. This is a team that's got some issues to address, so I'll take New Orleans in the series sweep here.
All right, so they're 8-7. Maybe they have some kind of chance at the playoffs, depending on tiebreakers. Who knows? Maybe not, but week 17 at Atlanta. I think I know where this is going.
It's the last game in the history of the Georgia Dome. There is no way that I can predict the Falcons to leave their building as a loser. They're going to head into the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We're taking the name away from the Superdome. we are taking the Mercedes-Benz title away from them. We will go into that as winners, winning the season finale, but probably missing the playoffs and leaving the Saints at a respectable, and I think very objective, 8-8.
All right, listen, I'm in an NFL wins pool, and I got the Saints with the 30th pick, so the very last pick in the pool. So if they take 8 wins, that would be pretty good for me in that pool. I would take it.
Drew, so on the one hand, 8-8 would be actually an improvement on the last couple of years. On the other hand, your quarterback is going to be 38 years old right after the season, and it's sort of another lost season of Drew Brees. So how would you feel if they went 8-8 this year?
It would be very disappointing. I mean, I'm preparing myself for that. I think the reality is that that's where they are, but Yeah, I think when you're on borrowed time with Breeze, this is the window to kind of compete. And who knows what's on the other side once he's gone. And so, you know, you would love for them to have that final, at least a playoff run, get in the postseason and see what happens. So, I would be disappointed for sure.
All right. So, as I said, the reason that we had people pick other people's teams this year is because last year, collectively, our league was like 180 games over 500. It was sort of out of control. So I'm very excited because with 31 teams in the book right now, our NFL is exactly 500. So if the Carolina Panthers if you pick them to go 8-8, then we got our league exactly at 500. If you pick them to win any more than that, then we got to go back and look at some of the other people's picks and figure out where to find a couple of losses to squeeze out of there. And I'm not sure that the Panthers are going to go 8-8, but Andrew, it's up to you to make that decision. So week one, of course, 3 days from now, the season opener, as it always is, we have the Super Bowl rematch in Denver. Broncos get their rings. Trevor Siemian under center. Carolina wants revenge. What happens?
Well, I almost don't think it matters who's playing quarterback for the Broncos, especially opening night at home. The buzz that's going to be going at that place. I mean, you saw what that defense did to Cam Newton in the Super Bowl. And I just think they are so good on that side of the ball. They're able to take away his best strengths, and he's not able to beat them. Consistently throwing the football with that kind of pressure. So I picked the Broncos.
All right, so last year their first loss was in week 16. This year they start the season with a loss, and then they come home and face San Francisco in week 2.
Easy win.
And then in week 3 they face the Vikings. Should be a good game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Vikings are kind of an enigma team. We're not really sure if that's like the kind of team that could maybe make a postseason run or if they finish 5-11. But I think the Panthers are too strong for them.
All right. Week 4, they go at Atlanta.
Those games are always weird. And
that's the one they lost last year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm going to pick Carolina to win this game, but it's going to take 2-minute drill theatrics from Newton in the end to win it.
All right, and then Monday Night Football, they face the Bucks the next week.
Easy win.
All right, and then they go into New Orleans again to
Yeah, I mean, I feel lame picking the Saints to be the ones that beat them, but it is in New Orleans, and I think it's going to be hard for the Panthers to go 3 straight weeks against division opponents, 2 of them on the road. You know, to sweep that 3-game stretch is going to be tough. So I'll pick the Saints to win that one.
All right, so they're coming out of the bye at 4-2, and they have a huge game against Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, I think Arizona. You know, that loss that they had in the playoffs, I mean, that just leaves scars. And I think they'll be hungry to come out and prove that they're the best NFC team on the road. So I'm going to pick a surprise upset here, Cardinals.
All right, so the Panthers drop to 4-3, and then they go at Los Angeles the next week.
I think at 4-3, that will kind of be the moment where they say to themselves, you know what, we need to prove we're a Super Bowl team, and they're going to go on a run here. I think they kill the Rams.
All right, and then they come home to face Kansas City.
I think that's another win.
All right, and then they are 3 days later at home against the Saints.
I think that's a win.
All right, and then they go at Oakland.
Easy win.
Okay, so now they're all of a sudden they're 8-3, and then they're at Seattle on Sunday Night Football.
That's a weird travel thing. They have to go to the West Coast to play the Raiders. I'm assuming they would come back to Carolina, although they might stay out on the West Coast, and then they have to go back to Seattle. That's a brutal travel stretch.
Tony, have you spoken with Riverboat Ron about their travel itinerary that week over Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I have not. but I'm sure that he has it well under control.
I'm going to pick the Seahawks.
All right, so they're 8-4, but they've lost to Arizona and Seattle. So, you know, there might be a tiebreaker coming into play later in the season, in the postseason. All right, and then they're back home to face San Diego in week 14.
Yeah, win.
All right. And then they're at Washington on Monday Night Football.
That's a win.
All right. And then they're at home against Atlanta.
Win.
All right. 11-4, and they end the season in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think they're going to lose that because I think they'll have won the division and secured a bye. And, yeah, I'll say they lose that.
Yeah, I'll
take
it.
So you think 11-5 is going to get a bye over, you know, the Packers-Vikings winner
I think Arizona will be too strong, and I think everyone else is going to kind of be mediocre. I think, yeah.
Y'all are giving Arizona way too much love.
Probably are, yeah, it's true.
I mean, at the same, I mean, they've got to prove that more than there's more than just talent on the roster, and that Carson Palmer is not going to fold under pressure. And that's all he's ever done.
Look, Tony, it's between giving the Cardinals love and between giving the Panthers love. So I'll take the Cardinals.
Okay. All right. Well, I was at that NFC Championship game. We just so stomped them.
All right. So, Akiva, there we have it. We have all 32 teams in the books. And our league collectively is only 6 games over 500. So a dramatic improvement over last year.
Wow. We shamed people last year. But 31 team in the books. Who gave the picks for the Redskins?
Oh, yeah, you fell asleep during that podcast.
What happened?
We had our other fans do it. We had the Cowboys. I think it was Shamir actually did it. I think our Eagles.
Oh, okay. What does that mean, Washington? I fell asleep during the podcast?
Well, we were recording at 5 in the morning your time, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
We'll start with you, Kyle. Who is the player, or what is the thing on this Tampa team as you watch them in 2016 that's going to make you drop the most F-bombs as you watch?
Drop the most F-bombs. Probably...
Who do you hate the most on this team, basically?
Who do I hate the most on this team? That's a great question. Man, I wasn't expecting this. Probably...
Who do you hate the least?
Evans... Yeah, probably Winston. Well, I have a lot of hate for Winston, but for off-the-field reasons. Evan Smith, maybe? For the offensive lineman, perhaps? God. Good question. Oh, I'm sorry. I have it. Okay, I got it. Chris Conte. Yeah, by far. Gonna make me drop the most F-bombs. He already has. It's been the preseason, and I'm like, what are you doing out there? What are you doing? And so, yeah, all season with this guy. They're gonna be dropping dimes on him all day. He's gonna have his back turned to the camera when he's running after wide receivers to the end zone. Yeah, Chris Conte.
All right, Gavin, what about you? Same question.
Well, Kyle Shanahan's not a player, so I don't feel like he's eligible for an answer here.
Well, if he's the guy that you hate the most, then make it Shanahan. That's fine.
He's the guy that I trust the least, but on the actual field, it's most likely going to be one of our linebackers because that is absolutely where we are the weakest on defense. I don't think it'll be Beasley, but there's a good chance that one of the two rookies, Deion Jones or Devondre Campbell, or Paul Warlow and his inability to wrap up solo, or Sean Weatherspoon and his old fragile self. I'm pretty sure it's going to be one of these guys that makes me punch a wall and scream at the television more than anybody else, especially now that Mike Person has been solidly relegated to third string center.
Tony, what about you? Or is it all roses with a 15-1 team?
Nah, it's 50-50. That's what we call Ted Ginn Jr. Anytime, look, is any
streaking down the sideline and drops the ball right in his breadbasket.
Oh, yep. I mean, he had 10 touchdowns last year. He left 10 on the field. Every time the guy gets past 20 yards,
he would have had 10 touchdowns against Brandon Browner exclusively.
If every time he gets past 20 yards, he gets little Tyrannosaurus Rex arms.
Until the last game last year, when Revis was injured and he got destroyed all game by Sammy Watkins. Ginn is actually the only guy ever to get 100 yards against Revis. It's possible during the Bucs year, Vincent Jackson did.
If he would have caught the other ball, he would have had 200 probably. I mean, the guy, he's stone hands, and it's been this whole story of his whole career. And, man, if he could catch the deep ball. Look, a guy with that speed, you would think that that's the one attribute he needs, to be able to catch the deep ball. But he just struggles, and now it's to the point where it's in the air, and you can see the nervousness take over.
Andrew, back to you.
I would say, can I say the offensive line? Am I allowed to say the unit?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you hate that whole unit? Yeah,
I hate that whole unit, and I think, you know, Breeze is 37, and they're going to get him hurt, and I'm not sure the Saints will be lucky to win a game if Breeze is out, so... I would say Jairus Byrd. There's going to be a lot of F-bombs in week 2 when he gets injured, but then I'll forget about him. So I'll go with the offensive line.
So you don't have a lot of faith. Who is it? Luke McCown still their backup?
I mean, he's okay. It's just, it's not so much that he's incompetent. I think Luke McCown is a good backup. It's that you need exceptional play at quarterback. Anything less than that for the Saints will not equate to a win.
Okay. All right, so guys, thank you so much for joining us again. Our final four teams, our final division, the NFC South. We have Gavin Napier again for the Falcons. Gavin's on Twitter at GavinNapierTCH, and you can also read about him on BeelStreetBears.com, all about the Memphis Grizzlies. Kyle, you're at Kyle WoTB. That's Kyle WOTB. And,
yes,
of course, can also listen to you on Word of the Bay podcast, which is WOTB podcast on Twitter.
That's it.
Andrew, your name, Andrew Juge, that's J-U-G-E, or just go to thesaintsnation.com. And Tony, you're at CarolinaCatChronicles.com. You guys have the C3 podcast every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. on YouTube or iTunes. And you're on Twitter at Cat_Chronicles. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, Akiva, we're done. 32 up, 32 down.
That was so fun. Let's do it again next year. But last year we did 32 podcasts, and this year we did 8, and we're just going to cut it by 4 again. We'll do 2 podcasts, one NFC, one AFC, 16 teams apiece. I'm being serious. I think that'll be good. It'll be good.
16 people.
The 3-hour podcast.
People just wait there. No, people wait there. This was like 3 hours.
Just call me at 11:30 then.
It'll take 3 hours to get the technology of the people connected.
We'll do one at a time. Whoever's patched in.
All right, guys.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, and we'll speak to you, well, maybe earlier the next year, depending on how your team does. We might have to bring you back in the regular season.